Insurance professionals work hard every day to keep people safe. But as technology transforms the industry, how can insurers protect not only their clients, but also shield themselves from ever-changing cyber risks? My name's Elizabeth Blossfield, and I'm the host of the Insuring Cyber Podcast, a bi-monthly look into how the world of cyber and the business of insurance are connected. Welcome back to the Insuring Cyber Podcast for part two of our series looking at how NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, are transforming the fine art world and creating questions, challenges, and potential opportunities for insurers. As a reminder, non-fungible means something that's unique or unable to be replicated. These tokens act as a form of cryptocurrency that allows you to buy and sell intellectual property ownership of digital items and track that ownership via blockchain technology. Last week, I spoke with two guests from Risk Strategies about insurance considerations for NFTs and fine art. If you missed it and want to learn more, be sure to check out that episode as part one of the Insuring Cyber Podcast NFT series on insurancejournal.tv. This week, I have two more guests to continue the conversation. First, I spoke with Honor Palmer Tompkinson, an account handler on the Fine Art and Species team at specialty insurance broker Howden Group. She spoke with me about some of the common misconceptions around fine art NFTs, their rise to popularity, questions that remain for insurers, and what the insurance solutions could look like. Here's our conversation. Hi, Honor. It's great to be speaking with you. How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you. How are you? How's the US?
It's great. I'm doing well. Thanks. Yeah, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
No, not at all. I'm so happy to chat to you.
Awesome. And I was wondering if you could just sort of start off explaining a little bit about what NFTs are and how they work for any listeners who might not know.
So NFT stands for non-fungible token. So it's a token that is digital and exists within the sort of digital space of a blockchain and attaches to an asset to prove authenticity and original ownership. So it's sort of like a stamp and proves that that asset is unique and not interchangeable. So in contrast, a Bitcoin is fungible. One Bitcoin can be traded or exchanged for another. They're exactly the same, whereas an NFT is non-fungible. It's completely unique. And most commonly at the moment, they represent digital files such as digital art, tweets, memes, but they can also represent real world items like real estate. The most common misunderstanding of NFTs, and especially when talking about digital art, and I think it is because NFTs have gained so much traction within the press recently as attaching to art, as being part of art, and a lot of people I think that an NFT is digital art. And I think it's important to understand that an NFT is actually just like a little certificate, online certificate, that attaches to the artwork and proves authenticity, or attaches to the tweet, or attaches to the meme.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's a really helpful explanation. Thanks so much. And I know that you wrote an article in May for Howden Group about NFTs. And in it, you talked about how the art market has seen sort of a shift during the pandemic as it pivoted to, you know, online spaces and virtual exhibitions. Do you think that the shift during COVID has had anything to do with the rise in popularity of the NFT space recently?
You know, I actually don't. So the art world has seen such a huge shift. Like every industry, the art world has had to adapt to a digital space in order to continue running while everyone has been locked at home during COVID. And it's been a really interesting transition. You know, the higher levels, we've seen trading of art online, galleries and online auctions. At lower levels, artists have been selling their art on Instagram and gaining wider audiences. Also, there have been many online exhibitions, so it's been a really interesting transition. However, NFTs are not a new phenomenon. They've been trading for quite a few years now. I think the first one was sold in 2014. Nifty Gateway, which is a digital art online platform and potentially one of the biggest, was started in 2018. So people have been trading NFTs, especially NFTs attached to digital art, for quite a long time now. And this hasn't actually been missed by the established institutions in the art world either. So there have been art tech summits held at Christie's since 2018 every year, which have explored blockchain and NFTs. So the traditional art world, I think, has been engaging with NFTs. They're not new. If anything, I think that the reason that they've sort of hit the world stage is more because of the rise in the interest and value around digital assets, so Bitcoin, the hundreds of cryptocurrencies that are emerging everywhere, as well as advancements in value in tech. I think that's why we've seen a rise in interest in NFTs and digital assets. I actually don't think it's got a huge amount to do with COVID. I think it's just coincidental.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And in your answer, you mentioned Christie's. I know that earlier this year, Christie's sold an NFT that was attached to a digital piece of art by Beeple called The First 5,000 Days. And that sale received a lot of attention. So could you just talk about that sale and sort of the impact that it's had? Do you think it'll sort of open the door for additional prominent sales and more well-known artists taking advantage of NFTs?
I think absolutely. So that sale happened in, was it early March? And I think since then, everybody seems to be jumping on the bandwagon. Sotheby's, Bonhams, all the top auction houses and Christie's have been having really notable sales of NFTs. Actually, Sotheby's had a really fascinating one in June called Natively Digital, which collaborated with Samsung. It brought together emerging crypto artists and the old masters and showcased early NFTs and really showed that progression of how NFTs have progressed over the years. Christie's has also had a really interesting sale recently, which was held by the Warhol Foundation. And it was a collection of images found on one of Andy Warhol's floppy disks that they turned into NFTs. I think in total, I can't remember how many there were, but it was over 3 million that in total the NFTs sold for. And I think that's actually the crux, the really interesting thing, is that we're seeing a new dawn of crypto artists, of artists who are working entirely behind their computers, as well as artists creating NFTs, so real life artists are creating NFTs of their real life artwork. And there's that kind of merging between the two. And at the same time, we're seeing new buyers enter the market. You know, buyers who are normally crypto buyers who would never have invested in traditional art market, but who are interested in attaining digital art. So I think it's a really interesting movement and definitely one that is changing and shaping. Some people are arguing that it's actually separate to the art market, to the boom in NFTs, and other people are saying that it's the new part of the art historical canon. So yeah, no, I think it's definitely creating a ripple that we're just going to continue to see.
Yeah, I think this is so interesting too. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves in the future. And we've talked a lot so far about the sort of rise to popularity of NFTs, but I've also heard, you know, some concerns about the immaturity and volatility of the market, especially among the insurance industry. So I was curious, can you talk about some of these concerns and what the general consensus is among insurers about whether NFTs are insurable?
Absolutely. So yes, NFTs are insurable under certain conditions. And I will come on to that in a little bit. But to answer your question first about volatility, NFTs, I mean, without a doubt, are completely volatile. They are not somewhere where they're not an asset which you can invest in and know that your money is going to be safe for the next 10 years. And I think a lot of insurers' concern would be the basis of valuation. And if you look at the traditional art market, and how we attribute value to art. You know, you have the artist, who was the artist, how famous they were, the condition of the artwork, you know, is it in pristine condition or has it been damaged over the years? You've got the provenance, whose sitting room has this art sat in? You've got who owned it, you know, the size that attributes the value, the rarity attributes the value, you know, this all builds value. And this has been a tried and tested way of valuing art for centuries. Throughout the whole canon of art history, this is how art has been valued. And you just can't attach that. You can't translate that to NFTs at the moment. You know, what is to say that one person who pays X amount for Beeple's artwork, another person is going to pay the same amount? You know, it's, I think there's been such a dramatic increase in value in NFTs. That is why it's such an unstable asset, because nobody quite knows where the market is going to go and yet go next, because the market's so young. So a few months ago, actually, there were some articles written about NFTs losing their value and the NFT market crashing. But actually, from my point of view, and the way that I've seen the art market and the high values, and especially the auctions that are going on at Christie's and Sotheby's and Bonhams, I think this market is showing no signs of slowing down. So to answer your question about insuring an NFT and the sort of nuts and bolts behind insuring them, is I've spoken to many underwriters in the London market who could insure an NFT in the same way that they insure cryptocurrency. And at the moment, we can only insure them under very specific conditions because, as you say, the volatility around NFTs and also the newness of the technology, insurers are quite hesitant, but it can be done. And at the moment, we can insure them if they are being held on a private key, which is in turn held in cold storage by a third party. So cold storage is essentially when the private key holding the NFT, which is a string of alphanumeric data, is uploaded onto a hard drive, which itself is online, so not connected to the internet at all. And then that hard drive is itself encrypted and in a bank vault, in a sort of Russian doll style. Goal level of security. So essentially, it's a little bit like saying we can insure artwork in storage. You know, we can insure NFTs if they're in storage online, as opposed to on your online wallet, on your app, on your Nifty Gateway app. That would be considered warm storage. Okay. So standard coverage would include deliberate loss or damage to that cryptocurrency private key, which is in that safe. Deliberate and dishonest acts involving the collusion of a custodian and theft, an in-person theft, not hacking. So, and insurers, having spoken to some underwriters in the market, would be willing to insure it at an agreed value. So if somebody paid for an NFT at a specific value, they would agree to insure it at that value.
Okay, that's great. That's a helpful explanation of some of the insurance considerations for NFTs. And who would be purchasing this coverage? Would it be the buyer of the artwork, the artists themselves?
So the purchaser would be a third-party custodian who's holding the NFT on behalf of the client. At the moment, we can't offer first-party insurance because of the moral risks surrounding the volatility of NFTs. That's not to say that we won't be able to in the future. It's just, you know, we're taking things every step at the time and trying to evolve with the market. So depending on the demands and needs of the client, we'll see where that goes. But to be honest, at the moment, NFTs and crypto being held in cold storage is normally by custodians anyway. You know, your average purchaser of cryptocurrency would normally keep their crypto online in a sort of online wallet on an app, rather than uploading it onto a private key and then putting that private key in a bank. So this coverage is really for custodians holding the crypto or the NFT on behalf of the client.
Sure. Right. That makes sense. Right, so given everything that we've talked about so far, what's your general outlook on the NFT industry? Do you think it's here to stay? And, you know, do you see the potential for more insurers to have an appetite for the space in the future?
I honestly think it's just the tip of the iceberg. I think the potential for NFTs stretches far beyond what they do right now, because predominantly they attach to digital media to prove ownership. And as we've discussed, the art world has seen a transformation in the NFT space. But I think digital assets will eventually transform the way we own things in the real world. And it will be really interesting to see, you know, if I buy a house in 10 years' time, will my proof of authenticity be in the form of an NFT rather than a contract? You know, I think that there is huge space for growth in this field. And I think it will transcend just the art world.
Great. Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Well, thank you for chatting with me.
We're We're going to shift the conversation away from insurance just for a moment, if that's okay with you listeners, to learn more about the world of NFTs from a digital artist who has experience selling her work as NFTs. People Pleaser, a multidisciplinary artist based in New York City, has worked on visual effects for feature films, including Batman vs. Superman, Wonder Woman, and Star Trek Beyond, as well as commercials and Blizzard game cinematics. Last year, her career was launched to new heights when she went viral creating original animations for well-known crypto brands and was approached by Uniswap, a decentralized finance protocol used to exchange cryptocurrencies, to create a promo video for the launch of its new algorithm. What she didn't expect was that the video, in which a unicorn brings life to a desolate land and awakens various elements of decentralized finance in the process, would sell for more than $500,000 as an NFT after her friends and fans created a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization called Pleaser DAO, to purchase the NFT and support her future work. The sale serves as People Pleaser's highest NFT sale so far in her career. She donated the full proceeds to Stand With Asians, an organization that aims to end violence and discrimination against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Since then, her work regularly goes viral, and her most recent project is no exception. She designed the cover for Fortune's August-September 2021 issue, titled Crypto vs. Wall Street, which was sold as a limited series of NFTs. She spoke with me about these projects, the process of selling her work as NFTs, what she wants others to know about crypto, decentralized finance, and NFTs, especially those who are skeptical, and where she sees the future of the space headed. Here's what she had to say. Hi, People Pleaser. It's great to be speaking with you today. How are you doing?
Hi, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. So I was curious if you could just start off sort of talking about your background and what led you to pursue a career as an artist.
Absolutely. I've been interested in sort of like drawing and illustrating my entire life. And then when I was in college, I started with this program called Design Media Arts, which kind of was a little bit teaching a little bit of everything, as in like front-end programming and graphic design, typography, even like physical board game design. So it wasn't very specific. And how I got into sort of 3D art and animation was I watched WALL-E in my freshman year, and then I really loved the movie. It felt really inspired by it. And then so when I watched the credits, there were so many names in the credits, and I thought, oh, there's no reason why I can't be one of those names. And then so literally went on Google and typed, how do I get a job at Pixar? And then they said, oh, well, at first you need to know 3D and all these softwares. And so I just kind of went down this whole rabbit hole of just learning myself outside of classes. And then after my third year of college, I felt I was ready to sort of apply for a bunch of jobs. And then so I did. And luckily I got a job in the visual effects industry. So, I was doing that for like several years, like working on movies, commercials, and even like game cinematics at Blizzard. And then until last summer, DeFi summer, where I basically kind of transitioned into doing DeFi and crypto related animations. And that's what brought me here, I guess.
That's amazing. And you mentioned WALL-E. I know on your website, it says that your work is influenced by animated films and the underground music scene, and traditional Chinese and Japanese art as well. Can you talk about some of these influences and how they're sort of reflected in your work?
Yeah, definitely. I think with sort of like Pixar films, I think it's more of the storytelling aspect that I'm really inspired by. Just let's take WALL-E, for example. The first half of the movie doesn't have any dialogue at all, but it conveys so much emotion, and you learn so much about the character. So I think the Pixar influences are definitely more on a story side and less of an aesthetic side. Aesthetically, I've been really sort of inspired by anime. Obviously, like I grew up watching anime, and so obviously some of the classics like the Miyazaki films I love. I talk about that in the breakdown for my Uniswap animation, where a lot of the shots like reference to Princess Mononoke, which is one of my favorite Miyazaki films. And then on my Instagram, my art Instagram, you can find a lot of pieces, that reference traditional Chinese or Japanese art, either in the materials that I use or sort of like the textures. Because I love going to museums and then seeing all of the ancient Chinese artifacts or, old Japanese art as well. And I think they're so beautiful. And I try to always incorporate that in some way in my art.
That's great. And you touched on this a little bit in one of your previous answers, but how did you originally get involved in the NFT space and what sort of drew you to it?
So, I mean, I've passively been investing in cryptocurrencies since 2017, but at that point, I never saw that it could collide with my skill set. It was completely separate. I have my regular day job, and then I would just kind of put extra money that I had saved up into some, 2017 ICO coins at the time. And then I kind of just diamond handed those all the way through the bear market up until last summer. And then my sort of interest in crypto was reignited again when one of my close friends, I remember he just texted me and said, "Hey, I'm like making this much farming coins in DeFi right now. You should check it out and stuff." And I was like, "What is DeFi?" And then so I kind of, fell into this rabbit hole of, and that was when I discovered crypto Twitter. So I didn't even know about crypto Twitter before that. And then I was looking around crypto Twitter, and that then I had sort of my first collaboration with a DeFi brand, and then through like a referral from that same friend. And then and at the time, I was sort of working with this influencer by the name Blue Kirby, and then he was the one who introduced me to NFTs. And then so he was selling some stuff on Rarible at the time, and then so that's how kind of like I discovered NFTs as well. And then I also listed some pieces on Rarible. Previously, I think I had always just thought that, oh, when you're making digital art, the only way you could sort of sell or monetize would be selling them as prints or like physical prints, for example. And then so when I listed these pieces on Rarible and then I saw them get bought up right away, I was kind of mind blown and just very intrigued by NFTs because I was just I think I understood the concept, but I didn't realize that there was actually any demand for it up until then. And then so then it was kind of a side thing where I would just maybe sell a few here and there. That's why there's so few actual NFT art pieces from me or minted by me, because at that time I was mainly focused on just doing commission animations for DeFi protocols. And then it wasn't until March when I did the Uniswap piece that I saw an opportunity to actually just hit two birds with one stone. And that it in itself was a commissioned animation piece, but also that I could list it for sale as an NFT. And obviously around that time was when NFTs started really blowing up in the mainstream world. And so that's kind of how I got into it.
Yeah, that's great. And I know that you wrote in an article for Fortune that crypto sort of changed your life, not just because of the money and the investing opportunities, but also you found a welcoming community of people. So can you talk about this and the benefits that you've seen from selling NFTs so far?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not even just selling NFTs, but I think the crypto community, and this is evident by, all the anonymous profiles on there, as I often say this in my interviews, where I think, not just that it's a welcoming one, but also they are not prejudiced like in the traditional world or the traditional art world towards people who only, carry clout or already have some sort of certain reputation. I think this space is so new that they're willing to sort of just reward anybody who's putting out good work. And it matters a lot less about what you look like, who you know in the industry, and it because I mean, just taking myself as an example, I came into the space with basically no followers. I created my Twitter account is not even a year old. I started with zero followers. Same, and a lot of these like blue chip NFT artists already came into the space, having previously been well known, like, with hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram and stuff. And so obviously, that's a verified metric for people or collectors to see, oh, well, they're already famous before. So that and then their work is worth collecting. But what I love about the crypto community is, they care a lot less about that, and they're more willing to give people who didn't previously have a reputation a chance. It's just if they see it and they like it, then they are, there's no hesitation in supporting it. They're just like, this is awesome. And then, and that's really kind of how I made my name in the space. So I was kind of just like literally an artist who's born and bred within the crypto space. And so, obviously the community means a lot to me. And hopefully with each new collaboration I do, it's also one that I can use to elevate the entire community as well.
Right, yeah, that makes sense. And I've talked to some who've expressed some concern about NFTs, saying that it's sort of just a phase or it's not here to stay or that they're too difficult to trade. But you've been able to really harness the industry to build a career as a full-time artist, as we've discussed. So what would you say to those who have concerns about NFTs?
Everything is speculative. I mean, NFT is just like any other crypto asset. While you're trading, you should be careful and do your own research. And there's obviously risk involved. And personally, myself, I don't really trade NFTs. I also don't really trade crypto. I'm just not a good trader in general. So I'm mainly just a holder, right? So, I buy crypto assets that I believe in, and I apply the same sort of philosophy towards NFTs. It's mainly just, especially being an artist myself, I'll buy art that I like, visually, or, if there's some kind of like provenance or historical significance in the piece, then I will buy and hold it as well. And so, I can't really necessarily give any trading advice, but I mean, it, yeah, it's certain, I've certainly been able to make a career out of it. And yeah, just with crypto in general, I think there's bull markets and bear markets. And then, right now we're in an NFT bull market. Everyone who's playing the game should just be mindful of kind of like these cycles and just know what they're getting into.
Yeah, definitely. That's great advice. And one of the projects that you worked on that I found really interesting was that you designed the cover for Fortune's August September 2021 issue, which be is being sold as a limited series of NFTs. Can you talk about this project and some of the work that went into it, how you got involved, and what it sort of felt like when you saw the physical magazine for the first time?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so originally it was Alex, who was the founder of Showtime, had reached out to me saying he was like, "Hey, the people over at Fortune Magazine want to get in touch with you, wondering about like a potential collaboration, wondering if this is something that you'd be interested in." And I said, "Yeah, of course, at the time." And then I think probably like a few months went by, and then not really anything happened. And then one random day, the creative director at Fortune, Peter Herbert, reached out to me via email, and then just straight up was like, "Hey, are you interested in making the cover for our next issue? It's going to be a special issue that we're doing on cryptocurrency, and we think that you would be the perfect sort of artist to do it." And then, obviously when I read that email, because previously I just thought, "Oh, maybe they just want to do like an NFT project together or something." I didn't know that they wanted me to do literally the cover. And then so I was obviously surprised and flattered. And then I saw this as like a great opportunity to use an amplified platform, right, which is a mainstream media, to sort of voice any kind of like narrative that I wanted using this platform. And then so of course I agreed to do the collaboration with them, and especially because the issue itself was going to be on cryptocurrency and DeFi, which is something that I believe in and care about as well. So yeah, I saw this as a great way to also elevate the community. And so I guess like then we started sort of like brainstorming. Initially, they were kind of discussing maybe doing a version, like a digital version, or that was inspired by their very, very first cover ever, which came out in 1929, and it has like a stag on it. And then so I think they saw my Uniswap piece, and then they thought, "Oh, there's like similarities between the unicorn and the stag." And then so maybe there's something we could work with there. And then the idea sort of like evolved since. And then I remember actually I was talking about this with Leighton Cusack, who's the founder of Pull Together, and also the guy who basically kicked started PleaserDAO. And then we were just having a chat, and I was telling him about my Fortune opportunity. And he was the one who basically came up with the idea, because I was just saying that I want to do something that represents, the idea of like cryptocurrency versus, Wall Street, or like, sort of like this comparison. And then he was the one who basically gave me the idea of like having like a portal, and then have like inside, representing all of the crypto anonymous like avatars and characters. And I mean, I thought it was a great idea. And then so I just kind of took that and, started to really think about how I was going to visually represent this. And then so the rest of the process was just me going through iterations and looking at inspiration and thinking about how I can actually translate that thought into a visual image. And yeah, so then it was definitely a stressful few weeks because I put a lot of pressure on myself. I knew how big of an audience this was going to have, or at least, how much it would mean to the community if it was done right. And so, because also I was careful. I didn't want it to be something that was controversial, right? Like, I just wanted to be fun and happy and also just represent sort of how I see crypto Twitter and like a bright and positive way. And then so, yeah, that was like mainly all of the thought that went behind it. And then obviously, getting the image delivered, the day that it was due and everything. And then when I published it online initially, it got overwhelmingly positive responses from the community. And I thought that was amazing. But it's even crazier now that the physical magazine is out and then people are just, it's literally like being sold out everywhere. I was getting messages from people saying, "Oh, I can't find it anywhere. It's sold out." And even I can just call like a bodega or when I was in LA, a bunch of newsstands myself and also see myself that it's sold out. So that's kind of, to me at least, like breaking the fourth wall of, seeing it carry from like the digital world to the real world that I actually live in, and that, these are real people who care about this and are actually going out to buy the magazine because of this cover I made. Yeah, it was a really special moment, and I'm obviously feel really blessed, and I'm just glad that people like it.
Yeah, that's amazing and obviously indicative that you achieved what you set out to achieve. It's such a cool cover and, I think it's a really interesting project. And obviously, you've done a lot during your career so far, creating visual effects for feature films and commercials and game cinematics, as well as for, animations for crypto brands. But is there one project in particular that you worked on that sort of stands out or a moment from your career that's particularly meaningful?
Well, it goes without saying that I think probably the Uniswap piece was my magnum opus, I think, to a lot of people in the crypto community, or at least more like the NFT community, because previously, I think up until then, I had already built sort of a small name for myself within the DeFi community, I had collaborated with pretty much all the big brands already, like Aave, SushiSwap, Yearn Finance, Pickle Finance. And so when the Uniswap piece came out, I mean, it was for their V3 launch, which is also a really, really highly anticipated sort of announcement. And then so, it was similar to the Fortune thing where when they came to me with the opportunity, I was just kind of like, "Oh, really? You want me to, visually represent such a big moment for you guys?" And then so, I also put a lot of pressure on myself to do it right. And, I wanted it to be beautiful and not commercial like, and just sort of like be an art piece, but that can sort of engage the community and that people enjoy it and just like an experience. And so I think that obviously that project is really special to me. And it's the same thing where the day that they tweeted out, within 24 hours, the video had gotten over 500,000 views on Twitter, which is just crazy. And just to view everybody's like comments and reactions to it was so cool to me. It was, I think a lot of people think that, oh, my favorite sort of moment about that was when the NFT sold for, over $500,000. But I don't even think it had anything to do with NFT. It was like the day that they just sort of broadcasted the animation out to the world. And just to see how people were consuming the media and responding to it was, I think, the most special moment of all of that, I guess. Yeah.
And you mentioned with a couple of these really big projects that you put a lot of pressure on yourself, and you've spoken before in interviews that you feel sort of a degree of responsibility to spread awareness about crypto in a positive way. So what are the ways that you're working to sort of close some of the gaps in knowledge or understanding of the space, and what are some of the main things that you want others to know?
Well, so I mean, obviously, I think my Uniswap video, like taking that as an example, a lot of people wouldn't really know just by watching it, sort of all the, backhanded imagery or the symbolism that was behind putting into the piece. And so this is why those sort of making of or behind the scenes videos, like the explainer videos that I do, are also sort of a very important complement to the actual art pieces that I do. And also, you know, just like in my interviews and podcasts, I will hopefully, you know, talk about like DAOs, NFTs, DeFis, and then hopefully, you know, that all goes into helping people learn more about the topics themselves. And, you know, the art itself is sort of, I see it as like a vessel to capture attention or engagement first. And then so people would watch my videos or animations and be like, what is this? You know, it's a striking image. I want to find out more. And then either by watching sort of my podcast interviews or, you know, the behind the scenes videos where I explain more about the concepts behind them and, you know, more about crypto in general is how people learn. And yeah, so I hope that that continues to be a thing.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of given, you know, everything that we've talked about so far, what's your vision for the future of NFTs? Where do you think the industry is headed?
I mean, right now, I think there's still so much emphasis around sort of visual art being like synonymous to NFTs, which, you know, I think definitely is and should not be the case. I mean, I shouldn't really be saying that because I'm a visual artist myself, but, you know, it is true. Like NFTs at the end of the day is just the technology that makes it possible, but it should be able to carry any sort of medium, you know, whether it's music, you know, pure sound, or, you know, text information, you know, like, like writing, et cetera. Like, I always give the example of, you know, in the real world, if you're selling a book, like the content is the book itself. It's not like the cover art that is, you know, sometimes maybe someone might buy it because of the cover art or be drawn to it because of the cover art. But, you know, that's the same thing when you move it into the digital realm, is just the NFT itself should be the content and not just like visual art. And, you know, right now you're still seeing a lot of examples of where musicians or people, you know, trying to sell like poetry or something, thinking that they need a visual representation or like they need to work with a visual artist to sort of sell the NFT. And I think that's just an indicator that we're so early that people are mainly just linking NFTs with art, which I mean, or with visual art, I guess, which definitely I believe not to be the case. And also, you know, obviously just being like in the metaverse and gaming, you know, this kind of economy already exists. And, you know, as in games, like in-game economies, tradable assets, it's already a concept that's so lucrative and people are so familiar with. There's no reason why it shouldn't be bigger with NFTs and the metaverse. And so I think that's mainly where the space is headed.
Well, people pleaser, this has been a great conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
That's all for this episode. Thanks to Honor and People Pleaser for taking the time to speak with me, and thanks to all of you for listening. That wraps up our two-part series on NFTs. I hope you've enjoyed learning about what they are and how they could transform fine art and insurance as much as I have. Once again, my name's Elizabeth Blossfield, and I'm the host of the Insuring Cyber Podcast, a bi-monthly look at how the world of cyber and the business of insurance are connected. Be sure to check back for new episodes of this podcast every other Wednesday. Talk to you next time.